Bribey English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Ayatollah Khamenei praises Iranian parliamentarians for enacting legislation 2 years ago to deal with Washington's unilateral sanctions. Leaders of China and Russia discussing avenues to further broaden bilateral relations to stand up against Western hegemony. And central banks, governors, and officials of the ACU are meeting in Tehran to discuss novel ideas for further profit and to boost the de-dollarization drive. It's good to have you with us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has hailed the country's parliament for enacting a law in 2020 to counter unilateral U.S. sanctions. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the strategic act saved Iran from, quote, bewilderment in the nuclear issue. The law defined clear conditions, including the removal of the U.S. sanctions, in order to revive the 2015 deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. The leader made the remarks during a meeting with Iranian parliamentarians on the 40th anniversary of the liberation of the city of Khorramshahr. Ayatollah Khamenei called the 1982 victory a miraculous event that has continued to awe many to this day. The recapture of the city from the forces of former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein is considered to be a turning point in the 80s war imposed on Iran. Political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas believes Western countries have resorted to a soft war against Iran. Let's listen to the rationale behind his assertion.
Well, it was a war that was instigated and planned and urged on by the Zionist Western Empire. Everybody talks about Saddam, but actually the real focus ought to be on the people who egged him on, who gave him the sureties that he would get the weapons he needed, and gave him all the encouragement to invade Iran rather ruthlessly. So it was a dirty war. It was a war to try and bring down arguably the most refreshing revolution of perhaps the last 500 years, because it was a revolution rooted in Islam. It was rooted in the idea of a moral political aspiration, and moral politics is what Iran and the Islamic Revolution brought at that time. And since then, all we've seen is a non-stop effort by Western powers to bring that that concept down, whether it's the political Walayat-e Faqih system, whether it's the actual economic mechanisms that are coming in place, whether it's the technological advancement of Iran, whether it's the geopolitical commitment to the oppressed in especially that Western Asian region. My point is, the most important aspect perhaps for the Iranians now to focus on is the soft war. Because the military war, I don't think it can be won by the Zionist Western Empire, as they've been trying to do. I don't think they can destroy Iran from within by raising a revolution against the establishment. What they could do is, through culture and economic means, they thought they could do it. And they've used the terrorism, the economic terrorism, as a major player. And the counter policy that has come up against that has been Islamic Republic of Iran, and Ayatollah Khamenei mentions it today, is the resistance economy.
The Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has wrapped up his trip to Indonesia, where he headed a high-ranking political-economic delegation. Raisi has hailed the visit as a platform for expanding cooperation in various fields, as well as further improvement of bilateral ties. The visit is part of Iran's policy of pivoting to Asia and cementing cooperation with Muslim countries.
The Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has made an official visit to Indonesia at the head of a high-ranking political-economic delegation. During a joint presser conference with his Indonesian counterpart, Joko Widodo, Raisi said Iran and Indonesia aim to increase their trade value to $20 billion.
As a result of this visit, there will be significant steps taken in the development of bilateral relations. We have set goals for development of trade and economic ties between the two countries from the current levels to the tune of $20 billion.
Raisi also said that both sides are resolute on promoting exchanges using national currencies.
If we don't want to say dollars, then we can say it in terms of the same level of investment in rupiah and rial, which are the national currencies of the two countries. We intend to work with this country, Indonesia, and other nations in our national currencies.
Presidents of Iran and Indonesia also signed a preferential trade agreement to expand economic relations. Indonesian President Joko Widodo said he hoped the agreement would increase trade between the two countries.
Today, Indonesia and Iran have signed a preferential trade agreement. We hope that it will increase trade between Indonesia and Iran. President Raisi and I also talked about the creation of a B2B agreement and also development investments in the Nusantara capital and solution to the oil and gas sector investment.
The Iranian president said the signing of different documents for bilateral cooperation in various sectors reaffirms both sides' will to develop relations in all fields. In the presence of Raisi and Widodo, senior officials of Iran and Indonesia signed 11 documents and agreements to strengthen cooperation in preferential trade, cancellation of visas, cultural exchanges, supervision over the pharmaceutical products, science and technology, as well as oil and gas. Raisi also said oppressive sanctions and pressure have failed to hinder Iran's progress, expressing Tehran's firm determination to improve relations with Muslim and neighboring states.
Before his departure, President Raisi said Iran and Indonesia are united against unilateralism. The two countries have agreed to increase the trade value to $20 billion and to use their own national currencies. These achievements are a testimony to Tehran's will to confront unilateralism and to expand cooperation with other Muslim states.
During his visit to Indonesia, Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, once again stated Tehran's firm determination to improve relations with Muslim and neighboring states. He said the expansion of ties with Indonesia as one of the important and effective countries in Asia and the world and a member of important regional and international organizations is very important for Iran. He added that despite pressure and oppressive sanctions, the Iranian youths have succeeded in taking major steps towards the improvement of science and technology as well as the country's economic development. He noted that Iran and Indonesia enjoy diverse capacities to deepen relations and expressed hope that his visit to Jakarta would lead to constructive outcomes for the expansion of ties between the two powerful Muslim countries in the region and the world. He added that Tehran and Jakarta have a common stance on key regional and global issues, including Palestine and Afghanistan. He also stressed the importance of establishing an inclusive government in Afghanistan with the participation of all ethnic and religious groups, which strives to restore the Afghan people's rights. Raisi said 2 decades of U.S. presence in Afghanistan has had no outcome but destruction and death of the Afghan people. The Iranian president emphasized that Iran and Indonesia believe in serious fight against unilateralism in the regional and international issues.
The Russian Prime Minister is on a 2-day visit to China, as the two countries are determined to further develop ties in the wake of Western pressure. Mikhail Mishustin has told Chinese President Xi Jinping that Moscow and Beijing are standing up against Western hegemony.
Our countries together resist attempts by the collective West to maintain global dominance using illegal sanctions to impose its will on independent states. I am confident that Russia and China will give a resolute response to these dangerous aspirations and create favorable conditions for confident progress towards our common strategic goals.
The Russian premier hailed the two countries' partnership at a time of turbulent international markets. The Chinese president, for his part, said Beijing-Moscow relations are deepening at a high level. Mishustin sat down with Xi in the capital, Beijing, after he signed a number of deals with the Chinese premier. Moscow has been pivoting to Beijing since the West imposed anti-Russia sanctions over the Ukraine war. The other side, China, has emerged as an economic giant, despite U.S. sanctions. It is counted on Russian energy, which is facing restrictive measures from the West. The pair say that their deepening ties are not targeted at a third country. Their leaders have also pledged a new world order devoid of Western dominance. Russia has issued a stern warning following a recent attack on its western borders by anti-Russia armed groups, pledging, quote, extremely harsh response to future raids.
On May 22nd, a unit of the Ukrainian Nationalist Formation invaded the territory of the Russian Federation in the area of the international checkpoint in the Belgrade region. In the course of the counter-terrorist operation, the Nationalist Formations were blocked and defeated by airstrikes, artillery fire, and the active actions of the Western military district units covering the state border. The remaining Nationalists were driven back to the territory of Ukraine, where they were completely eliminated. More than 70 Ukrainian terrorists were eliminated, as well as machinery and armored vehicles. We will continue to respond promptly and harshly to such actions by Ukrainian militants.
Shoigu described the move as a terrorist act by the Kiev regime against Russian civilians. Ukraine, however, has denied any role in the assault, which has been claimed by two anti-Kremlin far-right armed groups. In the meantime, the Kremlin says the use of U.S.-made weapons in the attack indicates the West's growing involvement in the conflict. The U.S. State Department has dismissed any direct involvement in the incidents, saying the decision on where to use Western equipment fully rests on Kiev itself. Doctors at an emergency center in Donetsk say that they keep receiving dozens of military personnel and civilians who have suffered injuries caused by shelling from Ukrainian forces. The number of patients has significantly increased since more NATO weapons have been used in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Our correspondent Max Civelli has more from Donetsk.
Specialists at the Republican Hospital in Donetsk have warned that the number of civilians who have been hospitalized is dramatically on the rise as Ukrainian armed forces are using more advanced NATO-supplied weapons. Almost 1,000 wounded have been treated since the beginning of 2023, the trauma center in Donetsk has reported. Specialists believe that the latest weapons sent by NATO countries are more advanced and lethal.
Until not long ago, only civilians living near the front line got wounded or killed. Now, following the new medium and long-range weapons provided by NATO to Ukraine, we have a much higher number of civilians being hospitalized. Look behind my back. Our hospital was targeted a few weeks ago.
Ukrainian armed formations have shelled hospitals a number of times over the past months. This hospital in central Donetsk, Voroshilovsky district, was hit by the artillery on April 28. That shelling caused 9 civilian casualties and severe damage to the building. On that occasion, among the dead civilians was also a child. 16 people also suffered injuries from the blast. Kyiv's forces fired high-explosive fragmentation missiles produced in Slovakia and transferred to Ukraine by NATO countries.
We have been denouncing the situation since 2015. We started with the European Court of Human Rights, but for inexplicable reasons our case was dismissed. We tried then with the International Criminal Court, but they have never visited the Donbas, and this case was subsequently dismissed. We are now trying to bring it forward to the UN. Will human rights be finally protected here as well?
In fear of attacks on residential areas, kids have been forced to switch to remote learning throughout the whole school year, which, by the way, ends on Tuesday. Max Civili, Donetsk.
Iran takes over the rotating presidency of the Asian Clearing Union during its 51st summit held in the capital, Tehran. The governor of the Central Bank of Pakistan, as the former chairman, handed over the presidency to the governor of the Iranian Central Bank, Mohammad Reza Farzain. Jamil Ahmad said the union can come up with new ideas for alternative currencies that would bring more benefits. Barzin, for his part, expressed hope for more cooperation between the ACU members. The VP of Iran and top banking officials of the member states have attended the meeting. The Asian Clearing Union, that has 9 members, was established in 1974 with the aim of reducing dependence on global currencies, especially the U.S. dollar. The main objective of the union is to facilitate payments among member countries for eligible transactions. The correspondent, Gisum Mishahmedi, has told us more about the 51st Asian Clearing Union Summit in Tehran.
Well, basically what you said was the gist of what the whole entire meeting, the 51st meeting of the Board of Governors, is all about. De-dollarization is high on the agenda. And Danny, this might seem like a new concept, but let's not forget that the ACU was established in 1974 with the aim of providing an opportunity for the member states to use their own monetary system in order to do business transactions. So it is not a new concept, but 50 years later, we see that the political scene and the new world order that is emerging is providing the groundwork for this to actually happen. Iran was a member from the very start when it was established in 1974 with a number of regional countries, including India, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Nepal. But what's happened today, and something that will be discussed later during the day, is devising a mechanism to accept new members into the ACU. And we have 3 observer member states that are present today. Russia, Belarus, and Afghanistan are present today. And if the member states agree, these countries might also join the ACU.
Hundreds of supporters of detained WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, including his family members, have staged a rally in the Australian city of Sydney to demand his release. The rally was scheduled to coincide with the U.S. President's visit to Sydney to attend the Quad Leaders Summit, but Joe Biden's trip was called off due to a crisis over the debt ceiling at home. Assange's family members thanked his supporters. Assange, an Australian citizen, was arrested in the U.K. in 2019 after Ecuador revoked his diplomatic asylum at its embassy in London, where he spent 7 years. He is now battling extradition to the U.S., where he is wanted on criminal charges. Assange's WikiLeaks released some 700,000 classified military documents, which exposed the U.S. government and its wrongdoings in Iraq and Afghanistan. Washington says the release of the documents put American lives in danger. With that, we come to an end for this additional World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar.
Whether man-made or not, food can have fascinating backstories. Products usually take a long journey before they end up on the dining table. Nevertheless, the food industry follows several golden rules that have helped it steadily grow over time. The most important of these is continuous product innovation and improved production processes to reduce costs and wastage. Others involve packaging and product accessibility, but probably the king of all rules is the taste that drives the food industry.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes markets, profits, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, We will be exploring the food industry and its related agricultural markets. We wanted to see how the food sector has expanded over the years and what companies are doing to increase their profits. So let's check out the Tasty Grub.
To become more familiar with how much work goes into food production, we visited Golha Food Industries. It was established nearly a century ago, and its products are now a household name. It produces hundreds of items in seven categories, such as dried legumes and fruit, spices, and canned products. It also takes great pride in its healthy product line, including gluten-free flour products. This producer has devoted a lot of attention to the packaging of its products. Due to its diverse product list, it purchases such materials as cans, plastic, and cardboard to design the appropriate type of storage systems for distribution. The company has a massive daily output due to its expansive production facilities. Most of the work is done by automated machines, but the fine details are handled by experienced staff. All production processes start when raw material enters the company. These materials are first tested for quality before hitting the production floors, most of which are domestically supplied. After being tested, the material is sent to various closed circuit machines for processing. Then it is time for sorting and more quality control tests before packaging.
Food production is a very sensitive process requiring many checks and controls that guarantee the final product is safe for consumption. And production machines play an essential role as they reduce errors and maintain constant output results. Plus, many of these machines have been domestically engineered, whereas they were previously imported at high prices.
This company has a highly equipped quality control and research and development lab. It's where many new products are created and food safety standards are controlled. Moreover, the staff in this department implement food sciences to make innovative products. It might be interesting to know that this department also has some of the best food tasters. This producer has been awarded Best Research and Development Department in Food Production for many consecutive years. Among its many achievements, it has also been awarded the certificate of favored brand by customers. This wouldn't be possible without adhering to strict national and international food safety and production management standards. Following such standards has helped it maintain its export share in the global food market. With years of experience, this company has grown such that it provides thousands of employment opportunities, both directly and indirectly. It also has thousands of agencies and stores all over the country. Plus, its products can also be purchased online. As part of its future vision, this company is looking to increase its market share both domestically and abroad. It also has long-term plans to increase production and improve the production process for efficiency.
The Iranian food industry has taken giant strides away from its traditional production methods. Industry participants say using food sciences and new technologies has helped the food industry grow faster than before. Never more than now has food been more accessible. In fact, it only requires a touch of a few buttons to receive it at home. Therefore, food packaging is a critical part of the production.
Over the last decade, there has been a great emphasis on developing packaging for the food industry. This is because Iran indigenized many machines needed to process and produce food items such as deli meats, beverages, pickles, and so much more. Proper packaging also increases shelf life, which is important for consumers. Previously, food items such as spices and dairy products were purchased bulk from customers abroad due to a lack of packaging. While exporting items in bulk has benefits, it's not as profitable as selling prepackaged foodstuff. So, in addition to adding value to raw products such as meat, companies have also designed attractive packaging to contain food in more manageable portions. Such a strategy increases not only product quality, but also food safety, which helps producers meet international export standards. This trend also helps companies with branding and has created job opportunities for designers.
As you probably already know, the food industry is heavily dependent on production in the agriculture sector. So it's no surprise that the agriculture sector holds the pulse of national food security and food exports. Plus, it is one of the only sectors that has been barely impacted by the US-imposed sanctions and the global coronavirus outbreak. That was horrible.
We looked at some figures from the Ministry of Agriculture to see how this sector is doing. Last year, around 6 million tons of agricultural and foodstuff products were exported. Trade of these products raked in roughly $4 billion. Pistachio, saffron, and confectionery products topped the export charts in value during that period. Other agriculture sectors, such as livestock, tree, and aquaculture, have also generated millions of dollars in exports. Last year, nearly 450,000 tons of these items were sent to markets in neighboring regions worth $500 million. Agriculture accounts for 8% of the country's gross domestic product. It might be interesting to know that around half of Iran's total non-oil trade comes from this sector. That's all based on data from Iran's Ministry of Agriculture. According to Iran's Customs Administration, the total non-oil trade value rose nearly 40% last year. Over 120 million tons of non-oil products worth $72 billion were traded with other countries in that period. Meanwhile, the government has implemented measures to encourage the development of agriculture. One trend this sector is witnessing is the application of smart technologies for the cultivation and harvest of various products. There has also been a boom in developing greenhouses and green practices to preserve natural resources. The word plastic was initially used to describe pliable and easily shaped objects. However, it only recently became a name for a category of materials called polymers. Such materials are abundant in nature. Take cellulose, for example. It's the material that makes up the cell walls of plants. However, synthetic polymers are a more recent invention of the last 150 years. These come from the plentiful carbon atoms found in fossil fuels. Since then, they have become an integral part of the industry, technology, and even various sciences.
We will explore Iran's plastic and polymer productions. We will also check out some of its downstream markets and their contributions to the national economy. These days, we use more plastic than ever before. It's terrible. So where does this material come from? And what goes into making this stuff? Let's find out.
Our quest for answers led us to a company specializing in making various polymer products. Parsa Polymer Sharif was established some 20 years ago and is a knowledge-based company that was born in the research department of the University of Sharif. As a leading advanced polymer compound manufacturer, it makes various products essential to everyday living. It produces compounds based on commodity thermoplastic resins like PP, PE, and the famous PET, or PET. It also engineers resins like PVC and so much more. This knowledge-based company is a major supplier of raw materials to many industries. Some include original equipment manufacturers in the automotive market and PVC pipe producers in the construction industry. Over the years, this company has helped Iran save millions on products that would otherwise be imported. This firm has three main functions: research and development, innovation center, and production. It also has a brand new line for researching and producing biodegradable polymers for the packaging industry. Most of the raw materials needed for production are domestically purchased. When this stuff enters the company, it is first tested and graded based on its quality. Then, according to its intended use, the raw material is formulated and sent to machines for production.
Machines used in the polymer industry utilizes some of the most advanced machinery for production. The extruder is one of the most commonly used machines. They play a central role in plastic production. Extruder lines are the largest converters of plastics worldwide. Some of these machines can be domestically manufactured while others are still imported.
Its products are all tested in its well-equipped research and development lab. The various granules and resin compounds undergo over a dozen tests while being analyzed for quality here. Also, new product formulas are created in this highly technical research and development department. Through these facilities, the company is expanding its product portfolio. Products made here are produced along the lines of exports. So, national and international quality standards are implemented during the production processes. This means the quality of products found here doesn't just match international standards, they go beyond the quality of competing foreign brands in the international arena. The headquarters of this company is located in Sharif University Advanced Technologies Incubator. Owing to this, it has strong relations and collaborations with the scientific community. It has also been awarded for its contributions to the scientific and industrial sectors over the past years. This knowledge-based company also exports its products. The company has a unique future vision strongly intertwined with sustainable business development. This is partly due to its forward thinking and social and environmental responsibility outlook.
Now, polymers are the primary materials that build many other products. Plastic items have different polymer formulations depending on their application. The majority of polymers made in Iran are domestically consumed. Some of its biggest customers are in the construction sector. Also, plastic is extensively used in the medical industry and transportation.
Almost everything around us is either made of plastic or has some plastic component. Moreover, plastic has played a central role in the development of the medical industry over the past 60 years. These materials are used to create hemodialysis machines, disposable needles, IV drips, and testing equipment vital to modern medicine. Plastics have also had a considerable impact on developing high-quality prosthetics. The National Medical Device Directorate estimates that Iran's share in the global medical device market will reach well over $7 billion in the next 3 years. PVC materials are also largely used in Iran's construction industry. For example, Iran's Doors and Windows Manufacturers Association estimates the domestic demand for PVC doors and windows is around 35,000 tons annually. This is partly due to the current residential construction boom in the country. The home appliance industry is also another mammoth customer of the polymer industry. Based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, Iran has doubled its production in this sector over the last 3 years. In 2021, around 15 million home appliance units were produced, with exports soaring to roughly $140 million. So, polymer production is key in expanding many manufacturing industries, which have raked in large amounts of foreign revenue for the country.
Well, I believe it is that time of the show where I should take a little break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field. Take it away.
Despite all the advancements in technology and the problems it has solved, food security is one it hasn't. In fact, it is becoming more and more of an issue beyond the countries that have always been grappling with it. One solution is to, well, end inflation and the global economic crisis, but that's hardly a solution. There's no end in sight with that. But another way is to use technology to make things more efficient. We wouldn't be needing more land because we're not getting it thanks to desertification of more and more land. We also wouldn't be needing more water because we're also not getting it, also thanks to desertification. We would actually need less of both, if only we could manage our resources better.
Iran has some potential for farming and agriculture, and that's a massive understatement if you've ever heard one. But we could definitely do with some improvements, some innovations in the field, especially with irrigation, because, well, we've been experiencing some drought and some water shortages a little bit more than what climate change would warrant. And that's why we're here to check out a smart greenhouse that believes has the answer, the shakeup that the industry needs to be a lot more efficient, especially with water, plus some extra goodies. So stay tuned to this episode of The Bazaar to check out what they've been able to come up with.
About that efficiency, greenhouses can help provide that by creating a controlled environment that, while it could be much smaller than a field, it can yield higher quality produce and more produce per acre. Greenhouses can protect the crops and vegetables from extreme weather conditions, pests, or really any other external threat. The parameters that are controlled in a greenhouse are light, ventilation, humidity, and temperature. This would allow the farmers to create the kind of optimal micro-ecosystem that would eventually lead to them growing healthier, tastier, more nutritious, and, you know, better-looking produce.
What you will find in this smart greenhouse are tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, bell pepper, and cucumbers. There are certain types of fruits and vegetables that are preferred to be used in greenhouses, for example, the ones that I just mentioned. And there are certain types of crops that are not optimal for greenhouse use, for example, wheat and rice. So, but that's just some information about greenhouses in general. What makes this particular greenhouse unique and smart is that all of the parameters that need to be kept in check in a greenhouse are all monitored and manipulated remotely through the cloud and Internet of Things, instead of some worker or some farmers coming in and out of the greenhouse to manipulate things manually. That's the smart aspect of it in a nutshell. But to find out more information about the smartness of this greenhouse, let's hear from some of the experts here.
In this greenhouse, we measure all essential parameters for the plants, like temperature, moisture, CO2, ambient light, the water parameters, and the moisture of the roots, using the available sensors and control them with the actuators and the smart control unit. And also remotely control it via Internet of Things. With properly controlling the climate and the irrigation system, we increase the productivity up to 30% and decrease the water consumption by up to 40% comparing other hydroponic greenhouses in our country. And in the next step, we are trying to recycle the drained water of the irrigation system and pass it through some filters and put it back again into the irrigation system in order to further decrease the water consumption. And also, we are developing a robotic harvester, including a mobile-based manipulator, soft gripper, and vision system equipped with artificial intelligent algorithm in order to detect the ripe crops and pick them in the proper time.
1% of the world's water resources are fresh water, and most of it, in fact, 70% of it, is used in agriculture. What we choose to do with that tiny, finite reserve is a responsibility that we need to bear. Greenhouses can control the irrigation of plants. You may have sophisticated plumbing systems in the ground or in the cocoa peat, as you will see, to prevent overwatering, which can promote rots and fungal diseases, and reduce evaporation, saving huge amounts of water in the process. There is even the option to recycle the runoff water and put it back into the system to further save up on water. The great thing about this particular smart greenhouse is that you don't need to be born into a farmer family that has thousands of acres of land to make this a viable option to you. You can own land as small as 100 square meters and it would still be a financially viable option for you. Especially since after the initial installation phase and the setup process, you won't be needing much manpower to control the environment.
Interest has been shown in this smart greenhouse by certain countries, especially in Africa, such as Kenya, Niger, and Ethiopia. The idea, and of course the working proof of the idea, really has the potential to shake up the industry. And if it catches on, it can only mean good things for the farmers and the food sector in general. Thank you for staying tuned to another episode of Bazaar.
Many thanks for that wonderful report. Now for our final portion of the program, let's check out some news and trends in the food and agriculture industries and some of its related trades. Each year, millions of tons of food go to waste. That's awful. Now a United Nations report shows that Iranians have the lowest food waste per capita in the West Asian region.
The report was put together by the Food Waste Index from the UN's Environment Programme. It shows that regardless of income, every Iranian throws away an average of 70 kilograms of food per year. This is below the global average set at nearly 80 kilograms. Food is mainly wasted in three areas: homes, food services, and retail. Household food waste accounted for the highest at 60% of this total.
The agriculture sector is shifting towards technology to realize a new generation of agriculture in the country. Iranian knowledge-based companies have developed dozens of technological products in this field.
The Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology says some 120 technologies have already been produced by 30 knowledge-based companies. These items are now being integrated into the industry. The products cover everything from cultivation to harvest and sales of crops and play an essential role in the productivity and sustainability of crops.
Agriculture is one of the fields in which nanotechnology has been able to develop. Over 50 widely used nano products have been launched in this sector this year alone.
The potential of nanotechnology in agriculture is high. Over 7,000 knowledge-based companies in the country are actively manufacturing a wide range of domestically needed products. Roughly 260 companies of this total are active in agriculture, biotechnology, and the food industry.
Well, that brings us to the end of our show today. I've been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In the previous edition of the program, we had a look at the different parts, different phrases of Kumail supplication in details. In this edition, however, we will have a look at the general frame of supplication of Kumail. Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were talking about the general framework of the supplication of Kumail. We said during the supplication of Kumail, we have three different stages. The second stage is constituted by using four means of recourse in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. The first means was Allah's previous goodness and birr and karam, kindness and grace. The second means was our love for him. The third means was our weakness to bear the torment, even the afflictions of this world, let alone the afflictions of hereafter. And the fourth means with which Imam Ali alayhi salam seeks recourse in the supplication of Kumail is the state of iltirar, being in desperate need to the Almighty Allah. But I assume in the concluding episode, which we are here with you, we can refer to some of the things that Imam Ali alayhi salam teaches us to ask from the Almighty Allah in the supplication of Kumail. I mean, actually, when we look at the framework of this supplication of Kumail, we understand that there are some things that we should not ask the Almighty Allah in our supplications, and there are some things which Imam Ali alayhi salam explicitly teaches us, and we actually are recommended to ask from the Almighty Allah in our supplications. From this outlook, we will try to comprehend things that we should pray to the Almighty Allah for. The first thing is blessing on Muhammad and his progeny. This is what has been the tradition of the infallibles and what we have seen. And actually, Imam Ali alayhi salam tries to pray for all the believers. He does not just actually talk about himself. He talks about all the servants who are in that situation. And not just that, we have been ordered and we have been recommended to pray for all the believers in general if we want our supplications to be closer to the station of response, to the station of ijabah. This is what we have been recommended in our traditions. Another point that actually Imam Ali alayhi salam teaches us to ask the Almighty Allah is praying for the great bounties of the Almighty Allah. As we pray to Allah the Exalted for everything, we should also pray to Him for great blessings. We should not consider a blessing as too big to be asked from the Almighty Allah. This is what Imam Ali alayhi salam is trying to teach us. However big our questions and our requests might be, Almighty Allah is greater than those. As long as it is ontologically possible, we must ask it from the Almighty Allah. For nothing is big for Allah, nor do His treasuries diminish, however great His bestowal might be. I mean, as we should not be ashamed of beseeching Allah for our small needs, even if it is for the fodder of cattle, similarly, we should not regard praying to Allah for His great blessings as asking too much from Him. however great they might be. But the point is that in all our supplications, after we turn to Allah, being in our desperate needs, we must rely on the divine planning. Because He knows best for all of us. One of the things we should beseech Allah, the Exalted, in our prayers, is that He should suffice us by His planning, by His tadbir, from our planning for ourselves. And He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, is the one who should take care of our affairs through His mercy and wisdom. And that He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, should not leave any of our affairs on ourselves. Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, says in the supplication of Arafah, O Lord, suffice me from planning for myself through Your planning for me. This is the concept which is drawn by many infallibles in the traditions and in the supplications. And it actually, during the supplication of Kumail, we see that Imam Ali alayhi salam is trying to ask God whatever he thinks he is best for him. And then at the end, he asks him for whatever that he feels the Almighty Allah deems best for him, he should grant him. But as you may have noticed, whatever Imam Ali alayhi salam asks the Almighty Allah, he does not ask for whatever is contrary to the norms of Almighty Allah in the universe and life. This is a very important point, because whatever we can ask the Almighty Allah from, it should not be for illegal things. It should not be like wishing the eradication of blessings from the others. No, whatever we try to pray the Almighty Allah to, whatever we try to ask the Almighty Allah from, must be for ourselves, and we should generalize our supplications for all the believers. Dear listeners, thank you very much for staying with us during all these episodes regarding supplication of Kumail and the different points regarding that. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parsetoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.